That's nice to have a kinsman on.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So what we're going to start with is the basic ignorance out there in terms of, not stupidity, but the ignorance of people not knowing. You are a bondsman. There are TV shows people, they think of the show that you just mentioned.
Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Dog the Bounty Hunter. That's not what you do. What does a bail bondsman do, and how did you get involved in it?
Well, essentially what a bail bondsman is he's a bank for people that are incarcerated, people that get in trouble, people that are in jail. So people call me to put out money to get them out of jail. And I secure their appearance in court by taking collateral and assessing their risk. So in the legal world, I'm almost like a bank. In the street world, I'm a legal loan shark. How I got into it is a great story, which is in the book, The Fixer. I was floundering. I was depressed, very depressed. Didn't know what depression was, sleeping till, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, coming home at 5-6 in the morning, staying out all night just to sleep and go through the night.
This is before you were married.
Before I was married, even, was going on. And I was basically just not understanding what my body was telling me, that I didn't want to get up. And then I'd go to the gym for 3 hours, but I wasn't working out for 3 hours. I was sitting there watching TV sets. And I was playing. I got a call from a buddy of mine that was a lawyer. And his big thing, his Maserati, his country club was, softball, and staking us to play, kind of like the Hustler with Paul Newman. And we'd go all over the country and play softball, and he'd stake us to play, and he'd pay me $25 a game to play.
Now, were you good at it?
I was very good.
Okay.
I was very good at playing ball. That was one of my, qualities, my instincts was playing ball, and got me actually through high school, which, again, in the book The Fixer, you could see I had ADD, but no, it was never determined until later on in life, when it could have been determined.
Well, back in the day,
nobody knew anything.
They just said you were lazy, yeah. You're bored, or not a good kid.
I was sitting out looking at at the window during, English, and people were saying, what's going on? I'm like, I have no patience, no interest in this. But meanwhile, I had some issues, and it wasn't diagnosed till later on. So getting back to what it was, I was playing ball, and he was the lawyer, and he said, hey, Ira, why don't you come down and pick up your ticket? We're going to South Carolina this weekend. And I said, oh, okay, I'll pick up my ticket. I went down there and met a young man in there that was going away, and he was going to go do 4.5 to 9 years in jail. And I said, hey, why don't you run? And he, young Spanish kid said, I'm not going to run. I'm not going to put my mom at risk. I did the crime. I got to do the time. And my mom put up her house, and I paid the bondsman X amount of money. And I said, wow, what a great business. So my buddy set me up with a few different bonds companies, different people, older gentlemen that have been in the industry 30, 40 years. And they took me for a run, and they made me pay for their lunches and their dinners, and I got nothing out of it. So I gave up on the industry. Lo and behold, about a year later, we're playing in a major tournament down in New Jersey, and I ran into a older gentleman, about 84, 85 years old at the time, and I said, hey, how'd you make your money? Real estate, because I asked for a wake-up call in the Ramada Inn down in Jersey, and they didn't have clocks in there, and the guy at the front the guy at the front desk didn't even give me a wake-up call. So I ended up telling this older gentleman who happened to be the owner, and he said, oh, alarm clocks, what a great idea. He wrote it down. He said, where are you from? I said, oh, I'm from Westchester. He said, oh. I said, how'd you make your money? He said, bail bonds. And I said, well, I've been trying to get in that business for a year. We ended up talking. We exchanged numbers. I called him a couple times, which is obviously in the book, The Fixer, which gets into it more in depth. And it turned out to be he was a long-lost relative who had helped bailed out my grandfather almost 50 years ago, which I never knew my grandfather was in jail. So now it goes back around, and I got into the industry through that.
So how does one become a bail bondsman, and where does the money come from? You're putting up money in the form of a bond,
correct?
And let's say there's $1 million bail. The bond is what, 10%?
Well, on $1 million, it's 6.25%.
It's 6.25%. Now you have to put up that bond. What is the client paying? How do you make your money?
I make my money up front. Client can't get out of jail without paying me up front, and I secure collateral.
And so what does he pay up front?
$62,000 and change, plus whatever the liens cost for the properties.
Okay, so that's what he's paying, and he's not getting that back.
Not getting that back. That's a fee that goes to myself, obviously, into my insurance company.
Interesting. Okay, so
it's almost like car premium. We take a premium for basically what we do. And what we're doing is we're putting up $1 million to secure your appearance in court. We're taking a fee, and we're, if God forbid you don't show up, the court doesn't have to go after the individuals. They come after us, and they got a guaranteed $1 million right there. So they have their money, the city.
So how do you keep these guys in check? I mean, how do you keep your eyes on them?
Well, that's what makes me me. I basically have relationships with everybody that I deal with. My attorneys that I've dealt with over the years are phenomenal and respect me, and I respect them. We've grown together. Plus, my clients understand that I'm an ally. You do right by me, I'll get you out. I'll give you every fighting chance to fight your case on the outside and do what you need to do to prepare your family if you have to step in.
So you're not only getting them out of jail, you're adding extra value. So let's talk about that extra value. Do you set them up, you know, with the right attorneys?
Well, I don't get involved with setting them up with the right attorneys. Right. But what I do is very similar to almost like we talked about it, being a life coach. You know, in what I do, I want my clients, and I say my clients are obviously the defendants at the time or the alleged defense or allegedly what they did. They could count on me for everything. I'm a priest. They could tell me whatever they want. I'm a rabbi. I help them find jobs. So I'm obviously an employment agency. I deal with families. I'm a social worker. I have people that walk into my life at the most vulnerable times of their life. They are so screwed up, so upside down. You know, the wife has to pick up carpool at 3 o'clock and then find her checkbook and find her deed to her house. You know, I mean, their worlds are just shaken. And the same as the celebrities. You know, when I deal with the managers, or I deal with the agents, or I deal with the lawyer from L.A. who speaks to the lawyer in New York, who contacts the manager, who contacts me.
So if the client has the money to put up, if he shows up, you know, to his trial, does he get that money back?
No. What happens is the case has to go on for a period of time.
Right.
No cases end in one day. So what I do, cases could go for a year, 2, 3 years. And then once the case is over, guilty, not guilty, or takes a plea, the bond is exonerated and I get off my liability.
And you get off your liability.
I get off my liability.
Now, do you have insurance companies who put up this money? So
yes.
That's the deal.
Yeah, I'm in partnership with an insurance company.
Excellent.
That's basically what it comes down to be.
Excellent. So the bottom line is that there's a love, I wouldn't say love-hate relationship, but the love relationship is you're getting them out of jail. You're being there. Everyone knows it's a business. I mean, people do things because they need to support their family and they need to have a sense of identity. So there's no harm there.
Sometimes good people make bad mistakes.
And correct. You know, do you get involved in any way, shape, or form with their innocence or guilt, or does it matter?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, I always talk to them. I really try to reach out to young kids. Kids that are 15, 16, 17, 18, go up down the line, and basically almost like a scared straight saying, do you want to spend the rest of your life incarcerated? Is this the area that you want to go in? I might get a call from a father that's incarcerated that I bailed out, then his kid is now incarcerated. And he says, Ira, man, do the right thing. I don't want my kid to follow my footsteps. And I sit down and I show him pictures on my wall and I tell him, is this where you want to be? Do you want to be in a gang unit at Rikers Island? Is this where you want to go? And sometimes I reach him and sometimes I don't, but I don't stop trying. And I deal with all walks of people. And I try to let them know, hey, listen, I'm a chameleon. I could wear a lot of different hats. You know, I could deal with the guy from Harvard, and I could deal with the kid in the projects. I mean, and I want them to understand, I feel your pain. I understand where you came from. Yes, I don't know everything about your life. I don't know, you know, coming from a single mother, what you had to grow up in. But I'm telling you what your path will lead to, and I'm trying to save them to say, hey, I don't need to make money off you. I want to help you. I try to get them jobs, see what I could do. I got a few kids jobs in the construction world, got some people in the unions, got some people working in restaurants, and there's a lot of great stories. There's a lot of bad stories. A lot of times I can't reach these young guys or these young people.
So take through the process. This guy, he's drunk, DWI, DUI. He gets arrested.
I'll get a phone call from most of the time from an attorney or a family member.
Okay.
And they'll say, hey, Ira, John got arrested. He's in the 17th precinct. It's a DWI. I said, okay, you know, don't tell him not to blow. Well, I don't know what he did. And you know, they were like,
don't blow into the
yeah,
blow,
my,
right.
my position is, and this is nothing against any police officer
out
there.
Jim.
It's just basically, you know, do the right thing, you know, give yourself a fighting chance every time. And I'll say, okay, you know, who's going to sign for the bail? And they'll say, well, the wife's going to call you, or, you know, or the attorney says, hey, I don't know what the bail is going to be, but be on standby. And I'll start positioning myself to figure out who I'm going to talk to, who's the point person who's going to call me up on the phone. And I try to walk them through it. And then they're wild. You know, sometimes it's a wife and it's 5 a.m. and you could hear dogs and kids screaming and I'm exhausted. I got my kids going, what the hell is daddy doing up so late? But, you know, I want to do my job right. And then I'll figure out through the system how long it's going to take for them to come up. And I'm already positioning myself to find out what they have as collateral. And then, you know, when the bail comes down, I'm there.
So what would a bail be for DWI?
It could range, you know, depending on the judge, you know, how many times you've had this before.
Once.
First time offender could be anywhere from, you know, ROR to 10,000.
So if it's 10,000, the bond would be $1,000.
$860 plus whatever it costs us to, you know, file a confession and judgment and, you know, secure some sort of paperwork to, get the guy out of jail.
And what kind of collateral would you need on that?
Sometimes I won't take anything. Sometimes I'll take a signature. Sometimes I'll take a deed to a home. Sometimes I'll take a car. Depending on what, everything depends on itself.
Right.
You know, every case falls under a different, you know, situation.
So it's all in live time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if this is a Wall Street guy that got jammed up, you know, down the line from a checkpoint, then I'm just going to take a signature. If this is a guy that's done it 4 different times and has a warrant history, I'm going to take some heavy collateral.
Right.
It all depends on what I could find out about the individual.
Now, are there rules for you, like do bail bondsmen, do they have particular rules?
I don't know if bail bondsmen in general. There's a lot of us out there.
Right.
I created my own brand, obviously, and did what I had to do. And that, you know, obviously the book, The Fixer, will tell you how I sat on the steps of the, you know, of the Manhattan and Brooklyn and Bronx courthouses and waited for these prominent attorneys to come down. From, you know, Jerry Shargel, Ben Brofman, Joe Tacopina, Jimmy DiPietro, Larry DiGiansante, Peter Frank, all these major guys. And I would always give them my card, and they would always be with these big-time bondsmen from the past. And they look at me, and they say, kid, you speak the part, but you're sitting there with a $99 suit on. So I had to invest in some money and get a nice suit and then, you know, be there for them. And, you know, one of my biggest starts, you know, Murray Richmond, they call him Don't Worry Murray, who obviously has a radio show also. Murray took a gamble on me back in 1998 and I never let him down. And he led me to other people. And Jerry Shargel led me to major, major corporational attorneys. And these guys count on me and I was there for them. And it's very important that I have them in my, you know, as loyalty in my pocket to say, hey, guys, I'll be there for you and you be there for me.
How long does it take to get someone out of jail, like, even for something like murder?
Oh, well, usually murder doesn't get in New York. Murder doesn't get bail unless there's some circumstances to it.
Manslaughter.
You know, depending on what collateral we have, how long it takes, I could get somebody out anywhere from 20 minutes to 24 hours, depending on. You know where he is in the Department of Corrections, what judge has got the case, if I'm dealing with...
So 20 minutes would be a phone call, correct?
Not really a phone call, just, you know, getting in front of a judge, getting the bail signed, and having the defendant either there or getting him out in, you know, whatever jail he's in.
It does sound like everything in life, that the system is somewhat... It somewhat favors those with money. As opposed to, you know, people who get arrested who have nothing.
Well, I mean, in retrospect, it could be, you're correct. I mean, obviously, money can't buy you out of things, but it could get you
the
best attorney and get you out of jail and give you a fighting chance. And that's what I do, you know. I'm not judge and jury. And obviously, I'm a married man. I have a beautiful wife, 3 beautiful kids, and they're all part of my industry. In the book, we talk about my kids go to camp, and I never went to camp. You know, I never grew up like that. I grew up with, you know, basically my father would take me to breakfast at a bank for a free meal, and then I go play, you know, basketball, football, baseball throughout the day, ring Olivia at night, and come home. That was my camp. My kids go to camp, and
that was the Jewish camp.
Yeah, exactly. it was the same thing in the Bronx and Westchester, and. I ended up, my kids went to camp, and my wife came from a camp background, so I want to give my kids every chance to succeed in life that I didn't have. I grew up in a blue-collar world. You know, right now I live in a white-collar world, but I'm still a blue-collar guy, and it's difficult to ground my children, and my wife is very good at that. And they go to camp, and, you know, we had a guy to jump bail, and they have visiting day at camp. And it's funny, we call it running of the Jews. I go to see my kids, and you figure the first thing they would want would be, you know, candy, cookies, and you know, Dad, I miss you so much, and Mommy, I miss you so much. And my kids see me, and they're like, Dad, did you get that guy to jump bail? And I'm like, yeah, we got him. They're like, yes, we got him. And, you know, my kids were so involved with that my daughter actually was sending me messages inside of camp saying, Dad, check Facebook. I think he's in North Carolina. So being a bondsman and being in the family I have, my wife is very heavily involved. And she's a great woman, and she's my soulmate. And, you know, to be a bondsman's wife's not easy either. You're getting phone calls Saturday night, you're out with couples, and you're sitting there.
And you got to pick up yourself
every
up and leave.
Second, because I have that fear. And we talked about how you basically talk about taking anxiety and fear away from people. I have a fear that if I don't pick up that phone, that they're going to find a new bondsman, that lawyer is going to get mad at me, and I'm going to miss out on money. And if I miss out on money, I'm not paying my mortgage, and I'm not sending my kids to camp. So that fear is constantly looking at my cell phone saying, I got to pick up that call.
So how steady, Ira, is it? Meaning, do you have work every single day?
Every day, every minute.
Okay. So why the fear if there's this consistency?
Because if a Murray Richmond or a Jerry Chargell call me because Dominic Strauss-Kahn or Plaxico Burress or Braylon Edwards or Cat Williams or Ja Rule or John Smith or Stephen Smith are incarcerated, I want to make sure that I'm there for him. Because if he gets upset and loses the case, first the client's going to blame the lawyer, then the lawyer's going to blame the bondsman. And if he blames
the bondsman. How is the bondsman responsible for losing the case?
Because if I don't get that guy out as fast as possible,
there's no time to do
the first thing that someone says is, why am I still in jail?
Right.
Why am I still here? Who do you blame first? Well, you blame your lawyer. Who's your lawyer blame? Blames the bondsman.
Right. Got it.
So we're hand in hand.
All right. So it's a constant.
Constant. We're out to dinner, and I have some really close friends. I have a very dear friend of mine that is a major hedge fund guy. I got other guys in the private equity business. I have lawyers that are friends. Garmentos that are friends. And I have other different friends, different walks of life, but where I live now. And they don't want to talk about, you know, how the market is. They don't want to talk about how many jeans they sold that weekend. Ira, tell me about what's going on in your world. We want to hear everything.
That's a more exciting world.
Of course.
So where does the bounty hunters fit in with you?
Well, I have a couple of bounty hunters. I recently lost a bounty hunter. He passed away. So I have a couple other guys, and they're not the greatest. You know, they're okay. So as soon as I get the phone call or I'm tracking a defendant that doesn't show up, I'm on the phone with the bounties.
But you don't make them wear any electronic device?
You can't make everybody wear. I do have people on bracelets, but okay. Has to be court-ordered most of the time.
Right.
I have two defendants, like I talked to you last night, from Oklahoma that I bailed out late last night that are coming back to New York that I'll put on bracelets. And they're actually tracked through a company that I use that goes directly through them. And then the guy calls me if there's a problem. So I could get a phone call from my phone, you know, once a night. Oh, by the way, did you know that blank is on our ankle bracelet and he's near Newark Airport? I'm like, well, give him a call right now on the bracelet because the bracelet could talk to you and say either move away from Newark Airport or we're going to call Newark Airport and you're going to get shut down and we're going to put you back in. So that goes on. Check-ins go on, you know, where people are checking in with me. I have over 2,000 clients that are out on bail and, you know, because cases could go on for a period of time. And they're checking in through my system and I shut down my service at a certain time at night so it kicks back into my phone. So it's a constant grind.
Now, once they pay you that initial fee, are there ongoing fees?
No.
No, so there's an insurance company behind you.
Yes.
If someone skips and they have to pay, how does that impact you? You obviously don't have to pay the whole thing.
I do. I actually do. I mean, I'm Ira Juddelson Bail Bonds. I'm the guy. You know, my insurance company basically are partners with me, and they'll help me if they need me. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's Ira Juddelson Bail Bonds.
So how do you absorb $1 million?
I couldn't absorb $1 million. So that's where I partner up with the insurance company, and that's why.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you partner up with the insurance company, then what happens?
Then if, God forbid, the guy jumps bail, we have properties, and we go after those properties, and the insurance company would bridge loan me to pay $1 million, and then we go after whenever it was recouped, we'd go back to them. And that's why you got to be a good bondsman out there to make sure you're taking the right collateral. Right. Because if you don't, one bad skip and you're finished. You're finished. You know, and I've done the largest bails ever in state history.
Now, one bad skip and you're finished. Could you ever be on the other side of the bars?
No.
No.
No, not like that, no.
Okay, so you just finished because...
You're finished. You're out of business.
You're out of business.
Yeah, the insurance company says we made a bad... You know, AIG was in the business a long time ago, and, you know, they made some bad choices. And, you know, if we make a bad call on a bond, you know, it's we take a hit.
Now, you've got close to a lot of people, you know, on the dark side who... I think the head of the Bloods was a client of yours.
Well, allegedly he's the head of the Bloods. He was a client. That's what they put in the newspaper, that he was involved in, you know, a gang, and he was a client and a good, you know, I would say a loyal guy to me.
You know, how does that affect your sense of safety for yourself, for your family? Do these guys get angry or turn, or once you get them out, they're happy and there's no other expectation?
Well, I mean, in the book, I talk about a lot of different stories, obviously.
Give me your best story.
Best story.
A few of your best stories.
Okay, I'll give you a best story. I actually had a client walk into my office, two clients walk into my office that were alleged members of a gang. And they were wearing some different colors. And it was pretty serious.
And, kind of Crips and Bloods kind of thing?
Well, yeah, kind of a situation like that. And I walked out there. I said, boys, this ain't happening here. And they basically were staring each other down. And they, out of respect, one of them left. And, you know, my office manager was very upset. And one of my workers was nervous. And, you know, you're talking about a street life type of thing, a street situation, that they had to understand that I'm not backing down, that this is, I'm an ally. You want me to be an ally, I'll always be an ally. You want to, you know, screw me a little bit, you know, excuse my language, then, you know, I could be an SOB.
You can use any language you want here.
Okay, you
want
to fuck with me a little bit, and that's what's going to happen. And, you know, they have to understand that. And speaking to some of the people that they, you know, basically talked to, I told them that, and I sent the word out there, because if Ira sets the standard in the industry, if Ira's not taking the bail, okay, then a lot of other people, well, if Ira's not taking the bail, why should we take the bail? If they went to him first, why is he saying no? And then it kind of gets around, and if Ira doesn't want to take that bail, these guys are staying in jail. And, you know, that's where the anger comes from people. Now, I've had situations where people have walked into my office and, you know, basically don't understand my world. And, you know, think that they get their money back at the end of the case because they finished everything.
Right.
And I expressed to them that, hey, listen, I'm in this business to make a fee too. And, you know, they basically turned around and said, hey, you know, I want my money back. I said, it doesn't work like that. And I had to reach out to somebody else to say, better calm your boy down and let him understand this is how it is. And then, you know, a week later, that guy came back in and said, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. And the piranha that he was a week ago now walks in, he's a sheep. So, you know, the word on the street is, hey, you know, Ira's an ally, Ira's our guy, you know, Mr. Ira, and, you know, that's what it is. I have more respect for people that I've bailed out in my life than I have the guys that I grew up with, because their world is a world of loyalty and respect, and they know that I'm there for them. And if they don't fuck with me, I will be there for them.
And fuck it with you means show up.
Don't jump bail. You do the crime, or you're involved allegedly in this situation, do the right thing.
Go
be honorable.
Trial. Right.
Be honorable. Be loyal. Don't screw your family, okay? Because then I got to go after your family. And then I got to turn up the heat on your family. And I got to have my bounty hunters kick your door in at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got to hire other different people. And I got to garnish your wages. And I got to go to your mom's job and embarrass her in front of people. And eventually you're going to get caught. And eventually you're going to get nabbed. Can't run for the rest of your life, you know? And if you do run for the rest of your life, you're always looking over your shoulder. I'm not telling you to make that decision.
And it's probably, I'd imagine, at this point, you know, considering the technology we have, you actually can't run for the rest of your life.
Well, listen, I have friends of mine in the DEA. I have friends of mine that are U.S. Marshals. And, you know, listen, they want people that are bad off the street. And I tell them, hey, listen, guys, I need a little help here. They're going to help me. They're going to help me, you know, and they'll work with my bounties and my skip tracers to figure out where these guys are.
What's the difference between a bounty and a skip tracer?
Well, a bounty is more of a, it's almost very similar to the same, but a skip tracer really works behind the scenes more as a computer guy, where a bounty's going door to door.
Right.
They're very similar in itself. They both could do the same thing.
And how do they get paid?
They get paid 10% of the amount of the bond when the guy skips plus expenses.
Okay, so
if the bond's $50,000 and a guy jumps, they get $5,000 plus expenses.
Plus expenses.
Yeah, you saw Midnight Run, right?
I saw Midnight Run. Yes. How accurate was that, by the way?
That was pretty accurate. You know, did a great job in that. Robert De Niro was a great, you know, more or less like a former, you know, cop that got pushed out that now is a private investigator, and you know, and he came, you know, to fruition to find people, and it was good. Jackie Brown's another good movie that depicts what a bondsman does.
Okay, so at the end of the day, how do you eventually get out of this? I mean, meaning this sounds like a lot of tension and a lot of fun, but at what point do you say, I'm hanging this up and I'm going to, you know, play with my grandkids?
Well, you know, that's one of the things I have right now is I got an app coming out called jammedup.com. It's a website right now. It's free to the end user. It's free to any professional that wants to sign up. Any criminal or civil lawyer, any bail bondsman, any private investigator, any legal expert out there that wants to sign up for free and claim their profile. It's for people that get jammed up in the system that doesn't know what to do when their world gets turned upside down. They need, and no one ever knows who to look, you know, what to do and where to go. I mean, years ago they had dummies for people that didn't know computers.
Right.
And they had that book out. And this is what we are. We're going to show you where to go when you get jammed up. And jammedup.com is going to be my baby. I got Fat Joe behind our project.
Now Fat Joe is not my neighbor who eats too much pizza. Who's Fat Joe?
No, Fat Joe is a rapper, Joe Cartagena, and is a personal friend, very, very close to Jennifer Lopez, Mark Anthony out there. He was one of the major, major hip-hop guys in the late 90s and early 2000s, and he's right now on a TV show with Major League Baseball, and he was just recently on The Kardashians, and Joe got jammed up. Joe did a little bid for tax evasion, and Joe was in my home, and we talked about it, and Joe didn't know where to go or what to do, and, you know, this happens
because,
a lot.
Because he didn't have the cash on hand to
pay
the bond.
It's not so much the cash on hand to pay the bond. You know, when you could be anybody, and when your world gets turned upside down, you know, you might not know an Ira Gettleson, you might not know a Ben Brofman or Jerry Shug, so you need to know what to do when your life gets jammed up. So you go to jammedup.com, and it'll teach you to find the right lawyer and then grade your lawyer in there. And it'll teach you to find the right bondsman. And if, let's say, you're sitting there and you think your wife is, God forbid, cheating on you, and you could find the right private investigator, or, you know, find, you know, you might want to find someone for a lie detector test. Or, like I said, we talked about the Donald Sterling case, you know, find a voice recording specialist on there. Jammedup.com is going to, anything in the legal world, you'll be able to find on Jammed Up. And that's my baby. And that's what I'm hoping that. Is
going to bring you money consistently.
Well, yeah, and the same thing with right now. I'm in talks out in California about possibly doing a movie about The Fixer, and people see the show Ray Donovan, and it's a successful show. But I had to deal with Showtime myself, and Ray Donovan was there first. And knock on wood, Ray Donovan is a great show. I watch it myself, but my world is real. My world is a real world. You know, my fixing or my being the fixer, I'm a fixer in a real business. It, you know, being a bondsman is a real business. And people understand that in the book, and I'm talking to some different people out in California, and we're just trying to figure out the right path. And I had a possible deal, like I said, with Showtime, and we're just going to try to go back to the drawing board and maybe bring it to another network and get the right writer in place and do it the right way, because I believe it is a TV show that people want to see. They want to understand.
Actually, I might be able to help you with that because of my clients.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll talk about that after the show. Let me ask you a question. Generally, when you see a bail bondsman in the movies, you see him behind a small, dirty, filthy office piled up with a lot of shit. You know, and the guy, you know, is not wearing a good suit. He looks like crap.
Like I did about 20 years ago.
You know, now is that just on purpose? So, I mean, is that a true translation of what it looks like? Or are you really coming to them and they're not coming to your office?
Well, I have three offices. I have a New York office, a Brooklyn office, a Queens office. My New York office is where I run everything out of. My Brooklyn and my Queens office are very similar to what you just talked about. My New York office has a little bit more of a conference room and basically dealing with people. You know, it depends on what perception you want to give to your people. It depends on what type of attorneys you're dealing with, you know, and when they send clients into your office. And I try to give a perception of, listen, this is a business decision. I'm assessing risk here. That's what I'm doing, you know. I'm not judging jury. I'm not judging you when you walk in my office. And, you know, they come in and they're just, you could see they're bug-eyed. and they're nervous and they're scared and they're like, Ira, help me. And I'm going to help them, you know? And I want to create a perception of, no, I don't have, you know, X, you know, whatever, but I do have pictures on my wall of all the cases that I've done, and my wall's filled up.
What's the average bond that you find most commonly you're backing?
I would say anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000.
So that's what they're paying?
No, that's what the average bond is. The average bond is they're paying, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10% on that.
Okay, so they're not, so it's small amounts.
Yeah, well, that's the average. You know, you get other cases that are big,
And basically you're working then on volume.
Yeah,
you're not working every case. You have a staff.
I have a staff. Yeah, I have three people in each office. You know, I have one person in each office.
Okay, and do they work on salary, or they also work on a percentage of what happens?
They work on salary, but everything eventually goes through me. They can't make a decision without me. So they'll call me and say, all right, I got a $5,000 in the office. It's a young man. He got charged with, you know, attempted robbery. He's 22 years old. He's only been arrested once before. His mother's here. She's a nurse. The father works, you know, for transit. I'm like, sounds great. Let's write that bond. Then they'll call me up and they might say, hey, Ira, I got a $25,000. It's a 27-year-old guy. He's a permanent resident. He was charged with, you know, possession of cocaine. He doesn't have very good strong signers. I'm like, I'm not writing that bail.
Right. Right. Well, is there a difference for people who are locked into the religious community, rabbis, priests?
I deal with a lot of different clergy people. They'll call me and they'll say,
are they more secure in terms of not skipping?
Well, no, I'm not going to say yes or no to that. The only thing I'm going to say is when they deal, a lot of the congregation will call me and say they're standing behind the young man or the young woman. And, you know, they believe in it and he's a good boy or a good girl. And I'll say, okay, let's see what we got. Let's try to put it together. You know, I'll vet it more and go down the line with them.
All right. So in vetting it more, could you take collateral from other people?
Absolutely.
So you could take it from wherever it
comes
from.
Yeah, bosses, you know, as you said, you know, rabbis, churches. Sometimes just, you know, a lot of times people in the community all rally behind a certain nationality and come in and say, we believe in this, you know, this gentleman, and he's there. He's been there for us. And, you know, I vet every case. And
did you ever find someone or a case so hideous and you really didn't like the person?
Yes.
That you wouldn't do the bond?
Yeah. A lot of times. Remember, I'm a parent.
Right.
So a lot of these sexual
cases.
So
if it's a child rapist, you're not, you know. Yeah.
But again, every case stands on its own merit, because a lot of times you'll get, you know, people that are in custody battles that will put the child up to saying that the father did this or the stepfather did that or whatever, and then you realize down the road. One of the greatest stories I have in the book is I bailed out a young man back, I believe, in the early 2000s. And his mother walked into my office, and she brought in her 14-year-old daughter who spoke English. She didn't speak English. She was a home attendant. And she's translating through the daughter, and the daughter is basically saying that her brother's innocent and that, you know, the bail was a certain number and, you know, please bail him out. And the mother was saying, he's innocent. And he was charged with rape. And I decided to become judge and jury that day. And I said, I'm not doing the bail. And she was crying, and she wouldn't leave the office. And finally, after a period of time, I said, I'll tell you what, why don't you, she's had property in the Dominican Republic. I go sell your property and bring me money if you want to do this bail. And I gave her a number. And lo and behold, about 3 weeks later, she walks in with the money. And my office manager, who's bilingual, says, what happened? Because she went down to the Dominican Republic. She had a house in her family for over 30 years that was given to her by her mother. And she quick sailed it. She quick claimed whatever she did down there. And she sold it for like 50 cents on the dollar. And she came back with the money. And then I had no choice but to bail the kid out. So I bail him out. And I'm in my office. And everybody checks in with me. And this kid walks in. He's got a zipper across the side of his face. And I'm like, oof, it's all pink and red. And I'm like, well, what the hell, you know, whatever, what happened? And I kind of like made a little remark to one of my kids in the office. And the kid spoke English. He says, this is what I got from somebody because they thought I raped somebody inside. And I was near a phone that I shouldn't have been near. And I'm like, part of me felt bad, but part of me like, you're in charge of rape. And usually a case takes a very long period of time. And, about 2 months later, the kid walked in with a disposition and exoneration of the bail. And I'm like, what happened? And he says, well, I had a girlfriend. very serious girlfriend, and I had another girl that I was with at that time, kind of, you know, stepping out a little bit, having an affair. And the girl that I was having the affair with basically screamed rape because she found out I had a girlfriend. And then she came forward, and after, you know, the DA's office did their, you know,
due diligence,
they found out that this girl was lying. And I then kept this kid incarcerated for 3 weeks where he got a zipper on his face. And I felt terrible. And I said to myself, wow, I really can't be judge and jury. I got to let the judicial system take its course, and I just got to look at it as a business. And every day I write a bail, I think of that. I think about how I can't do that. But so I got to vet every case individually. And people look at me and say, wow, you're taking bad guys out of jail. But here's a kid that I took out that was innocent. And there are cases like that. And I felt terrible. And every day I think to myself, if I got him out that first couple of days that the mother had a certain amount of money, then he wouldn't have that zipper. But he has that zipper, and possibly he's blaming me for it now.
Well, I mean, possibly he's blaming you for it now. Unfortunately, he's probably blaming the girl who
yeah, of course. Charged, I don't think they're right? together.
Let's talk for a second, because you have more inside information than most. When you get arrested for a crime, doesn't it seem somewhat wrong that once you're inside, you're much more likely to get more than what the punishment that you were supposed to be receiving, whether it's 2 years in jail or 4 years in jail, beat up, stabbed, or raped? Doesn't it seem as if the system itself is out of control and you're actually getting punished for more than what the crime is?
Well, I mean, again, DAs and judges are more privy to information about the case than I am. I'm never really privy to what goes on the other side. I think they do a great job. I have tremendous respect for DAs and judges. I have great relationships with both sides. But it is a better chance to fight your case on the outside if you're out of jail and you're seeing your attorney and you're looking at discovery and you're looking at the evidence. And it does make it a little difficult to the other side when you are out to basically have your attorney file motions. You're dealing on an equal playing field and basically dealing when the other side has more strength.
Does anyone get like a discount for certain types of status?
No, there's no discount. There's no status. No, so I treat everybody the same.
Everyone is the same.
Everybody's the same.
Okay, so there's no really discount.
I mean, listen, I have relationships with a lot of different people. I get referred by a lot of different...
I mean, if you're a family member, you know, uncle, cousin, who's arrested, he still gets charged the same?
Everybody gets charged the same. I never... everybody gets charged. Because if I walk into that restaurant, they're not giving me anything free.
Okay. There you go. Spoken like a true kid from the city. Okay.
I don't expect anything for free, and I want them to understand this is a business. This is a business for me, and I'll be there for you. I'm your Willy Wonka. I'm your golden ticket. I'm going to get you out, but you do the right thing by me, I'll do the right thing by you.
So after you get them out, you're actually adding more value. So now they come out, and now what?
Now they come out, they check in with me once a week.
They have to check in with you.
Yeah, I got to check in. And they're out, and you know, a lot of times they'll call me up and say, "Ira, what do you think about this? What do you think about my case? Do you like my attorney? Is he doing the right thing?" And I'm like, "Listen, do you like your attorney? Is he doing the right thing? Do you feel comfortable? Is this your pit bull? Ira, I need a legal expert. You know, I need a handwriting specialist." I'm like, "Go to jammedup.com now. You know, you'll find a legal expert on there. I need a private investor. Go to jammedup.com. You'll find a private investor." You know, so we correspond and we talk, and you know, and they'll say, "Hey, Ira, I want to go to Vegas." And I'm like, "Go, have a great time. Let me know your flight, when you're going, when you're coming back. You know, hey, Eric, listen, my son is having a tough time with this whole thing. I'm going to be, you know, probably take a plea 3-9. Can you talk to him?" "Yeah, bring him in. We'll talk." And we talk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You know, so you wear a lot of hats.
A lot. And I got to be honest with you, I like that part of my business. I really do. I get my juices up. I enjoy the action. But listen, I have a family, and I have to feed my family. But, you know, like I said before, I grew up with a lot of different walks of life. The people that I deal with now, they're very loyal. And if I need them, they'll be there for me. And I know that.
Are you ever in danger?
I've gotten threatening phone calls.
Now from who and why?
Different people that can't get out of jail. Different people that thinks that
because
I did them wrong.
Because you didn't
take them out. Different people that thought I did them wrong. You know, whatever it might be, you know.
Charge them too much or something.
Never charge them too much. Just, you know, they don't understand the industry and, you know, whatever it might be. Can't get out of jail. I wouldn't do their bail. Somebody else wouldn't do their bail, and they make a comment, well, if I didn't do it, why should we do it? And then it's, you know, who are you going to blame?
So what do you do when that happens?
I say to them, man, listen to me. You know, I'm doing my job. You got to understand. And they don't want to hear it. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. You know, and they also know that, you know, I'm on the walls all over the different jails. And, you know, I get phone calls all the time. Last night I got a phone call from a guy that bailed out twice. And he just called to say, hey, what's going on, man? I might be getting bail soon. I'm like, I heard. He goes, will you be there for me? I go, absolutely. And he's like, what have you been up to? I go, I'm coaching my son. He's like, oh, yeah. How you doing with that? I'm doing good. He's like, tell him I said hi. What's he playing? I'm like, oh, he's playing football. He's like, oh, man, tell him to run for a touchdown for me. I'm like, no problem. And we have that type of relationship.
All right, so at the end of the day, there's the good, there's the bad,
but and the ugly.
It seems like you don't get rattled very much.
I don't get rattled.
Why? Tell me why you don't get rattled.
Because I've been doing this 17 years, and
that's not why you don't get rattled. Something about your personality.
My personality. I'm like I said in the beginning. I'm really a guy that grew up in a world where, you know, my friends were, you know, their fathers were cops or electricians. Or teachers, or, you know, my mother worked in Bonwit Teller, if you can remember those days.
I remember those days. Yeah, I'm older than you.
Yeah, and, you know, and now, you know, my kid goes out, and I'm like, where you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, Danny's house. What, you know, he's like, you know, Danny's father, you know, he owns that hedge fund, or, you know, Jimmy's father, he's a private equity guy. So, you know, I learned the you could say the street days, you know, and understanding that I could be a chameleon. I could understand where people come from. Plus, you know, listen, I grew up and I fought my whole life. I worked in bars and I got a license to carry a gun, so I understand how to do that. And I understand the world that if you're honest and loyal, people will be the same back to you. And you got to read people. I read people. That's my gift. Not a great writer. I don't read very well from a book. But I could read people. That's my gift. Other people have certain gifts with, they could be a doctor, or they could be a great student, or they could, you know, they could be a great salesman. I could read people.
Does the carry license come with being a bail bondsman?
No, I had to go for it. It took a long time to get my, you know, my business carry and stuff like that, you know, and have, you know, have my gun registered with the city of New York.
Yeah, city of New York is tough on those things.
Yeah, they are, and they do a great job, and I think it's great because it tries to keep guns off the street, which is great, you know. And I have no problem with that. You know, they put me through a rigorous situation, and it's all fine, all good.
Excellent. So the next evolution is obviously this app. This app sounds like what life should be.
Everybody,
pretty simple.
Everybody in America should have jammedup.com on their app. It is free to the end user. It's free to the public. And for anybody that's out there, whether in Ohio, Philadelphia, LA, Hawaii, if you get jammed up, and every 8 seconds in America, someone gets jammed up. It could be a matrimonial case. It could be bankruptcy. It could be you're looking for an immigration lawyer. You could need a private investigator. You could need an armed guard. You could need a legal expert. Jammedup.com will basically guide you through that, almost like a Valium. Will slow yourself down and say, okay, I found what I need here. I found one. And then at the end of the day, if you had a great experience, you're going to grade that person, like kind of like Angie's List. And then you're going to say, oh, that person was great, and he's going to get a star.
How long did it take you to put that thing together?
It's been almost 2 years, and I have the two people that put it together with me. Are great guys, and the people that built it already sold their company years ago for major, major money. So they have experience. They already have the foundation. So they did it, done it, made a ton of money, and now they want to do this. And they believe more in this than what they sold for millions years ago.
It sounds like you stepped in something.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I believe in the product. People have always asked me to endorse different products, from ankle bracelets to, you know, little handcuffs or anything in my industry. And I've always kind of taken a negative. I even didn't really want to write the book. And Simon Schuster said, I think it's a great idea to let people know who you are, what you do, and your world. And it's a great book. It really is. It was an easy read for me too, because I don't read very well. And but this app, this Jammed Up, is something I really believe in, because you don't realize how many phone calls I get from friends, family, and people that knows a friend or family that knows me to say, what do I do? Where do I go? How do I do this? Nobody knows what to do when they get jammed up. And I could probably think of you three guys right here that are basically saying, hey, you know, I get a traffic ticket when I'm driving down to Florida on spring break. You know, what do I do?
I treat a lot of lawyers. I just call them up.
Right, but a lot of people don't know where to go.
Right, right. And you know what? That's absolutely true. And at the end of the day, people don't prepare for what they don't expect.
Of course.
You know, and if they sat down and they said, what's the possibility of me accidentally going for my cup of coffee and golf, you know, hitting, you know, a little girl in the street, you know what? The possibility is high.
Absolutely.
Could happen.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you know, some cop has it in for you and before you know it, you're in jail.
Well, or you're calling your wife, and like I said, she's got one daughter at soccer practice. She's got carpool for her little one, and he's saying you got to find this. You got to find the deed. Where do I look? Well, her whole life has been in the dark about the bills or where the house paperwork is. Now she's got to find it, and then she's got to call her mother to come babysit. Craziness happens. It's a domino effect.
So what do you do with that? What happens when people can't find the deed to the house?
Well, I have certain systems in my office that we can get the deeds. And I have certain systems where I'm involved with a title company, Intracoastal Abstract, where I'm able to, you know, do title searches and get deeds.
Got it.
Yeah. I got it. I try to set the right foundation for everything I do.
Do you have a PI aspect to your business as well?
No. I mean, I have PIs that I farm out to, but nothing on my own.
Okay, so the only thing that is on your own are skip traces and
my bounties work for me, yeah. And they also work independently for their own. You know, they do a lot of work on their side. They work for insurance companies.
Now, you mentioned they weren't the sharpest tool in the shed. Now, why is that?
Well, you know, everybody sees, like we talked about, Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Right.
Okay? And listen, whatever he's done to create his own brand and make money through his show, I commend him. It's great. But that's not my world, because I would think he would have a very tough time dressing the way he does with six different cars going to the South Bronx trying to find somebody. It's not working there with his pellet gun. It's just not happening. Now, you know, if he wants to get 10 people to find somebody out in Hawaii, God bless him. But in New York, it's not working like that.
It's one person.
Well, I mean, listen, I walked in, you know, in 1999, I went out with my bounties, or 2000, I'm not sure exactly. I went out with my bounties to find someone that jumped on me, and it's in the book, and they had a KOS on them. A KOS is kill on the spot.
Yeah.
And it was set out on the street that we heard that.
Now, who had the KOS?
Well, allegedly somebody had put that word out. I'm not saying which group, but because apparently he was involved with some serious stuff. And he was out on bail with me. Unbeknownst to me, he was cooperating. And unbeknownst to me, another agency was looking at him. So the other agency had went in trying to find him about a week before, and now he was on the lam and he had jumped my bail. And we had an idea of where he might be, so we went to his girlfriend's house. But we went to the fourth floor of a walk-up. He was allegedly on the sixth floor, but we got wind that he was on the fourth floor. So my bounties went up, and I went with them, and there were some shots that rang out throughout the corridor inside this place up in an area. And I said, this is not what I signed up for. I don't want to get shot. I don't even have my license back then. And I came home, and this guy got away from us, obviously. And I looked at my wife, and she, at that time, and we were just married a little over, I think, a year, maybe a little less. And she says, listen, I didn't sign up for you getting shot. So I said, okay.
Unless it was by her.
Well, yeah, and I didn't even have my will in place yet, and having life insurance in place yet. So she was like, listen, you know, you're going to have to hold off until that gets in place. And we joked around about that. And I ended up saying, listen, I can't be doing this. You know, I got to figure out a better solution. And we figured out a better solution.
Yeah. What's the biggest hit you ever took on a skip?
$250,000.
It's a big hit.
Yeah.
Now, how many Excedrin did you take after that one?
I was sedated for about a week. But we ended up catching him later on. We caught him.
Really?
Yeah, we got him down at Dominican Republic about a year and a half later. But unfortunately, you only have a year to bring somebody back.
So if it's a year and a half, then you don't get your money
back.
I
lost, but I was able to recoup some from some properties, and we took a little bit of a hit. But it was enough that I had a lot of sleepless nights. I still have a lot of sleepless nights. Got a lot of money out there.
Right, meaning a lot of money out there.
On the street,
2,000 people walking
around. Yeah,
I mean,
cases last over a long period of time. Long period of time.
Right, and it doesn't settle until they're actually either vindicated.
Absolutely.
Now, if they're vindicated, then it's over. It's done.
Yeah, like I said, either you found guilty not guilty, or you take a plea. It's right. only three different ways.
And at that point, your job is done.
Once the case is over and the bail's exonerated, my job is done.
So who would you encourage never to go into this business, and who would you encourage to go into this business if they weren't your competitor?
I mean, listen, I got to be honest with you. New York is a very tough place to write bail.
Why?
Because the laws are not in your favor. You only have a certain period of time to bring somebody back. And, in New York, we got to go in front of a judge to have a bail signed. Other states, you go in front of the jail to have a bail signed. Other states, you could bring somebody back within 10 years and you get exonerated off the bail. New York doesn't work that way. Our bails are a little bit, higher here in New York, I think. And our laws are a little bit tougher here. It's just a little difficult, find your navigation through, New York law and New York system. So I stepped into this industry. I floundered for a long time. I tried to become a sports agent. Didn't work. I own nightclubs. Worked, but then some people got hurt in it and, it didn't work.
Lawsuits.
Yeah, lawsuits. Somebody fell through a window. There was underage drinking, whatever it might be. I owned a tanning salon, made money, but then 50 other tanning salons opened up. There was a lot of different businesses that I tried to get into, and I figured if I threw 100 things against the wall, something would stick. And I lucked out here, and I found my niche. I'm very good at what I do, okay? But it also beats me up left and right because I am a married man. I want to have a life with my wife. I want to have a life with my three kids. In the book, I talk about being a Little League coach on the field during my kid's game when he's 7 years old. He's up at the plate. We're down. We lost to this team 20-0 the first time we played him. And how do I know it was 20-0? Because we were only playing five innings, and you only allow four runs an inning. So, and then the other team gets off the field. We lost to them. And we're playing them again in this big game, and we're down 14-12 in the last inning. And my kid's up, and my phone rings. And it turned out that, I don't know if you remember the legendary songwriter Joseph Brooks, who wrote "You Light Up My Life."
Yep.
Well, he was out on bail with me on a bracelet, and the bracelet was cut. And the company from North Carolina is calling me saying the bracelet was cut, and I think I'm out $750,000. And my wife's looking at me going, pay attention to your fucking kid. You don't see him enough. And I'm like, but I think I just lost $750,000. And I go and have one of my other guys, coach, come bring over to third base. And I call up and I call up my office and I get the number of Brooks's house, and I find that one of the detectives is there. I said, who are you? He goes, who are you? And after we went through the nonsense, I said, is everything all right? He goes, who are you? I said, I'm the bondsman. And my bracelet was cut. He goes, don't worry about it. You're good. I go, what do you mean? He goes, you're good. I found out about 2 minutes later that he was gone, that he asphyxiated himself. And I went right back to coaching. My kid hit a game-winning triple, and we won the game. So, those are the things that are, exciting to me. But again, it goes—
Who says death is all bad?
It goes back to saying that, I have to have a wear a lot of hats.
Oh, that really. So what's your greatest nightmare in this whole scene? You got thousands of people out on bail. It doesn't seem like every night you're getting a great night's sleep per se.
The other night I was in Greenwich Hospital. I thought I had a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah. I had pains in my chest, and I just coached my son in football, and he played a whale of a game, and I had to go to a bas mitzvah, and my phone was ringing from the game till whatever. I answered 7 messages after I got off the field. I was working on 2 bails, and I just felt this constant stress, this constant heaviness. And I called my wife, who was at a different bas mitzvah because we had to split up that night. And I said to her, I don't feel good. She's like, what do you mean? And she's like, I said, I don't feel good. She goes, and she starts screaming at me. She goes, you don't take care of yourself. You're this, you're that, you're da-da. You're constantly on the move. And I'm like, listen, this is the life that I chose. And, I spent 24 hours in Greenwich Hospital, basically with heart monitors and worried about whether I had a heart attack or not. And it turned out that, everything worked out. I still think that there might be a little something wrong, but we're going to go to some cardiologist and see what's going on. But this is my world, I don't know what the end game is. I'm hoping it's, you know.
You're hoping it's this app?
I'm hoping it's the app in, you know, in Zuckerberg or LexisNexis or somebody from the Silicon Valley says, what a great idea. We want to partner up and take you out, but we want you to stay in and call it a day. And I come back and I write another book and do a feature film out in Hollywood.
And that's the end of the story.
Yes.
Okay.
That's it. Then I'm going to go coach my kid a little bit more and hang out with my wife.
Ira, you got a great book. You got a great story. I think the app is brilliant.
Thank you.
I wish you all the luck in the world. And it does seem that everyone should take a look at that app because you never know what's going to happen next.
I agree 100%. I really do. Again, like I said, I have people that have asked me to do different things. This is something that, as Fat Joe said, this is a movement. And we're going to take this, he said, to the major people in the record business that Joe's with. You know, I know he's very close with P. Diddy and Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony. And, you know, Joe's going to get it out there, and we're going to get it out there. And every college kid in America is going to have this on their app. And basically, if they go on spring break and they get in trouble and they don't want to tell their parents, or they're in, you know, University of Michigan and God forbid they get into a fight, they could find whatever they need and actually grow up a little bit and find what, you know, on this app. And I'm hoping that it really helps people out there navigate themselves through the legal world.
So who's the best defense lawyer that you would recommend?
Oh, God, there's so many of them out there. There's some great ones.
Name me three good ones.
There's more than three. I don't want to basically say... And now, but listen, there's a ton of them out there. There really is. There's some great ones.
And you would find them on the app.
They'll find anybody on the app, yeah. They'll find them on
the app.
But
are they rated?
They will be rated, you know. That's one thing you'll be able to do.
So for right now, if someone got arrested and they called you and said, could you recommend me someone good, would you do it?
Well, I mean, I would never want to recommend somebody, you know, what I might say to them, hey, listen, there's five or six guys that I believe in. You know, if it all depends on the type of case. You know, and, you know, you make your choice because I don't want to let that person say, oh, you recommended this guy and he screwed me. So, you know, that's the world. People don't understand. A lot of people make mistakes. They choose the wrong attorneys. And like I said, it could be in anything. I mean, you know, you're going through a divorce, you choose the wrong attorney, you're finished. You're going through a bankruptcy law, you're finished. You know, you immigration, you're if you choose the wrong lawyer, you're out of the country. And that's what the app makes so special about it, you know? I mean, you're going to be able to see who was rated and why. You know, are they picking up my phone call? Are they working extra? Are they filing the right motion? You know, is this the right private investigator? Is this guy the right legal expert I need for me? Is he a translator? Is he understanding me, you know? And you'll be able to, on the app, go to, it'll be in Mandarin, it'll be in Spanish. You know, it's a lot of different things.
Sounds great.
It is.
Ira, thanks.
Doctor,
appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for having me.
You got it. I want to once again thank Ira Jettison for coming on to my show. Pick up a copy of his book, The Fixer, on Amazon.com. Also, visit his website at IraJettisonBailBonds.com and look up his app, JammedUp.com. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, and remember, to every problem, there is a solution. I am your problem solver. Do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Check out our other episodes on GluckRadio.com. It is something there for everyone. Keep listening. Keep sending in your feedback. Till next time.